ECU. Private Nation. Purple and gold family. Stand to your feet. Put your crossbones up and lean side to side. Yeah, and lean side to side. Yeah, and lean side to side. Come on. Yeah. Welcome to the island, man. It's crazy in here. A whole sea of purple and gold waving in here.
Welcome into the Pirate Preview right here on the Sports Objective. Getting ready for a big game, I think it is, on Saturday. With us right now, Kyle from LaGrange. Barber, what's up, dude?
What's going on, Dave? Yeah, huge game Saturday. Playing for win number six. Biggest game the Pirates have played since 2015. Last time we had a chance to be bowl eligible. I'd really love to take care of it this weekend, get it over with, so we don't have to do it against Navy or Cincinnati. So it'll be a tall task. Memphis is a good team, but I think the Pirates are ready.
Bubba Rosamond, what's up from China Grove? How are you, Ben? I guess he didn't hear me. Matt Semenza, we'll come back to Bubba later on. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, guys? Happy to be here as always. I'm fired up for Saturday. Huge, huge opportunity for Mike Houston and East Carolina heading down to Memphis, which is a really tough place to play. Bottom line, we're going to find out exactly where we are as a football team this Saturday. And everything on the line with a chance to go bowling. So looking forward to it.
No doubt. Before I forget, and before we introduce our great guest, one of our dear friends of the show, want to remind everybody, happy Veterans Day for all the veterans out there. We couldn't do it without you. And as Charlie Daniels said on my show back in 2007, he said, Dave, they're the best we've got. So want to remind that of all the people. That it doesn't matter if it's peacetime, wartime, international, domestic, whatever. If you put on that uniform, you are definitely, I have a tip my hat to you, and certainly appreciate all that you've done for us and will do. Bubba Rosenbaum, I know that we have a very special guest, a guy that, speaking of tip of my hat to him, he's been part of our show for the last couple of years. Plus, he's been on ESPN for many years, a retired cop from Orlando, and he's still alive. Mickey Mouse didn't kick his butt. Rooney Angolia, how are you, man?
Good, guys. Great to be back. You know, I love being on with you guys.
I tell you what, so excited, Rennie, because I was telling you, we have this week, we have the Liberty Bowl. Next week, we have the Military Bowl, and we have another bowl to be named later in Greenville coming up in a few weeks. We've got a tough three-game stretch. Want to get your take on starting off with Memphis. We'll take it one bowl at a time. How do you feel about our chances in the Liberty Bowl this week?
Yeah, well, I told you guys, I think it came up when I was on your show before. I told you ECU was my sleeper for the American, and I think it was Kyle that said, do you mean sleeper, like they could win? And I said, no, but I think they could knock some teams off and get bowl eligible, and they're right where I thought they would be. So kudos to Mike Houston. I had Memphis last week. They beat SMU, which was favored in that game. Seth Hennigan, their freshman quarterback, he was a game-time decision. Well, it was the right decision by Ryan Silverfield because I think he threw for about 375 against Houston, looked really good. Kelvin Austin, one of the most dynamic players in the country, got nicked up a little bit in that game, but he's a tough kid, came back in, he played in that game, and he made some big plays. So they started getting their rhythm going a little bit, but it's a game, I think, if ECU plays well, they can win it in the Liberty Bowl, but I think it's going to be a really good American Conference showdown.
Randy, what kind of pressure did SMU get on that quarterback, that freshman quarterback from Memphis? I watched SMU play a couple times this year, but I really don't know how much they blitz.
Yeah, they didn't as much. Now, I'll tell you this. They weren't getting to them with their rushing. They run an odd front, a 30 front, but Jim Levin will go an even front, so he put a fourth rusher up there. And they really weren't getting to him. In the second half, they started blitzing him a lot. And you could just see it. When they picked the blitz up, it was just he was picking them apart, right? If they got to him, got him off his spot, they were doing okay. But as you know, and Matt knows as a defensive guy, if you blitz a quarterback and you don't get to him, you got one-on-ones all over the place. And he made more of those throws than he didn't. And they ultimately won the game against SMU.
Has he – obviously not his first playing time. He didn't get the start against UCF, I'm assuming.
He was hurt. So, yeah, he was out that game. The backup quarterback played, and that was the kid's first start since he started in high school. So yeah, UCF ran into the right Memphis team when they got him. And so offensively, Memphis didn't do anything. But yeah, they are a much different team with Seth Hennigan at quarterback.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think when you look at Memphis from the outside looking in and you see that Temple game, you see the UCF game, and you're saying to yourself, wow, this team is extremely beatable. But you take a closer look and you realize they didn't have Seth Hennigan. And I agree, Rennie. He makes all the difference in the world. That offense just operates at a much more efficient level with him at quarterback. So I think that's a great point.
And the other thing, guys, Ryan Silverfield, I think he's – it was an interesting stat when I talked to him. So they were 4-4 last week going to that game. That team, the Memphis team, has not been under 500 since 2013. That's amazing when you think about it. 8 years that team's been 500 or better. So I told him, I said, if you lose this game against SMU, it's going to be the first time you've dropped below 500 in 8 years. And I said, your kids know about that? He goes, no. He goes, and it's the first I've heard about it. So now I'm a little nervous. I guess that puts pressure on me. But guys, you have seen in college football more than ever. And, you know, some people say it's analytics, but teams are going for it on fourth down more than ever. And they're going for it in places on the field that we've never seen it before. I'll give you a perfect example with Ryan Silverfield and Memphis. So SMU held them, I think, 8 for 22 on third down, which is pretty good, right? So if you're a defensive coordinator, you're thinking, okay, we're getting off the field on third down. Well, he went for it, did Memphis, on fourth down 8 times, and he got it 5 times. I mean, so they were, like, just taking shots, and one was a 4th and 11, one was a 4th and 12. So they were breaking the back of SMU converting those big fourth down plays. So get ready for Ryan Silverfield to go forward and be aggressive, because I just think that's the way he feels right now. You know, house money, we're going for it. And again, they're trying to get – so it's kind of interesting. Both teams are 5-4, so you're both battling for bowl eligibility. So I just think it's going to be a whale of a game.
We go for it a lot on fourth down also. I don't know if it's about choice as much as – I don't think Coach Houston trusts our kicker outside of 40 yards. He's very accurate inside 40 yards. Doesn't seem to trust him outside 40 yards. So we and statistically, we are much better on fourth down than we are third down.
And I don't know, maybe Matt can answer this. I almost think from calling games this year, it's like defenses take that sigh of relief when they stop a team in like 3rd and 8, right? And they're like, oh, we did our job. And all of a sudden, they're like, oh, crap. The offense is staying out. They're at the plus 48. And then it's almost like they pucker up a little bit. And then you're seeing a lot of teams convert on fourth down.
It is a good point. And you do see it seems like this year you see it more than ever. And it kind of highlights the importance of getting stops on first down. You know, it's like that old situation when you play Navy, they're always in 4-down territory, but you're starting to see it more and more. And really what it forces you to do as a defense is get that stop on first down and try to put people in a situation where they're facing, you know, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, somewhere in that territory, and make it very tough for them to convert on fourth down. But it is interesting. It just seems like it's a new thing in college football.
Yeah.
Hey, Rennie, back to guys. So Bubba helped me out on this one. Our group text, I believe you had on the stat, I believe it's over 70%, 70-some percent that we are on fourth down this year in the first 9 games of the season.
He's a stats guy.
I was trying to
recall
Rennie,
what that number was. I know I sent it to you. It was 72%, 18 out of 25.
Yeah.
And that's something that Donnie Kirkpatrick was talking about, East Carolina's offensive coordinator, as far as third down has been so poor. But at the same time, even though it would be poor, it wouldn't be as poor because some of those third down calls, they knew it was a 4-down situation.
Yeah, so maybe this game, guys, coming up, the punters and kickers can just take it off, right? And it can just be nonstop action back and forth between the offense and the defense.
I think our defense is planning on forcing a few punts the way they've been playing here lately. At least, if we're going to win this game, we're going to have to.
Randy, I wanted to ask you, when you look at East Carolina's offense, you know, for you saw us earlier in the season,
yeah.
Now we've sort of progressed through here into the second half of the year. What are your thoughts on this offense in terms of, you know, where do you think we've improved? And I'm curious what you see from Holton Ahlers lately in terms of just his efficiency.
Yeah, I mean, I think Holton, first and foremost, is a leader, right? And I think you need that from your quarterback position. I think the kid's gutsy. He makes plays. And he, you know, doing games every week, it really drives me nuts, and specifically in the quarterback position. You have to have situational awareness, what down it is, what time in the game it is, what the score is, clock, all that stuff. And I just see it all the time from players, specifically quarterbacks. And when I watch Holton, he seems like he has a really good grasp of, okay, you know, we have to get a first down here to close this game out. And if it means I have to get it with my feet, I'm kind of scanning the field and I'm going to do what it takes to get it done and get that first down. So I really like that. I love the 1-2 attack with Keaton Mitchell and Raji Harris. I think they're two of the best backs in the conference. I really do. And so now, as we get into November, and I'm an old school guy, and I think you are too, Matt, you know, there's an old saying, you throw the ball to score points, but you run the ball to win games. And you just, that's it. That, to me, it's an attitude with offensive lines. Everyone's banged up. Everyone's hurt this time of the year. It's an attitude. I think you establish the run. You get really physical up front, and then you can throw off of that, and you just grind it out. And I think that would bode well for ECU against a Memphis team that has a weapon like a Calvin Austin and a Hennigan can throw around. Really just try to set the tempo and the tone with that running attack that we know they can do.
Yeah.
You guys, how about the fact that we have two running backs? You have with Keith Mitchell, you have a guy that should this week, he can get over 1,000 yards. We hadn't had a 1,000-yard rusher since 2013. You look at Raji Harris, he's at 400 and Bubba, I believe it's 475, somewhere around there. So he's had a really nice season with three games to go. So you have two backs that are roughly around 1,500 yards already.
Yeah. And hopefully, if we're going to win this game, Keaton's probably going to have to hit that, get into that 1,000-yard mark. Ready, what did you say to Memphis's defense? RO line struggled earlier in the year with protecting Holton. The last, I believe we've given up a sack the last two games, so that's a huge improvement.
Yeah.
What did you say to Memphis' defense?
So I'll tell you this. So their defensive coordinator is Mike McIntyre, right? Former head coach, who's at Colorado, has been places, so he's a veteran. I know for a fact what he did against SMU was he disguised his defenses, right? He dropped eight a bunch, okay? Mm-hmm. But he disguised that. His thing was, I need to confuse the quarterback. Now, I don't think his plan is going to be to do that as much against ECU because, you know, Holton Naylor's that attack is much different than Tanner Mordecai in an SMU. So I would expect if it's Mike McIntyre, he's probably going to, you know, put an extra hat in the box, right, and say, okay, we're going to stop Mitchell and Harris, okay, and we're going to force Holton Naylor to kind of beat us on the outside. With that said, that's a good challenge for Holton because he's probably going to get some one-on-ones out there if he can recognize, you know, those opportunities, C.J. Johnson, find the spot where he thinks he can win, and I think he could have a good passing day.
Yeah, need C.J. to step up, have a big day.
Rainey's saying right there.
Go ahead, Bob. We'll have some delay when you're in. Go ahead.
In addition to C.J. Johnson, maybe Audi Omotosho make some big plays down the field in the passing game as well.
Yeah, Rennie, I wanted to ask you, like, when I was watching East Carolina last week, and I've kind of observed it more over the last few weeks, and I mentioned this to the guys earlier today on a text chain, but it seems like we're really effective right now using the jet sweep motion to really set a lot of things up, not only in the passing game. I mean, if you look last week against Temple, two of our touchdowns to Ryan Jones, our tight end, came off of jet sweep motion with Tyler Snead. But it seems like we're also using it effectively in the running game. You know, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, how much stress does that put on a defense when you can set that up?
A ton. I mean, I love it because, you know, it's eye discipline, right? And as a defensive player, when that motion comes, I mean, you got to be looking what you're supposed to be looking at for your defense call. But inevitably, your eyes go, right? And especially, I love it. And people are like, you know, you'll run a jet sweep and it might go for 3 or 4 yards. And people are like, oh, that play was crap. No, it wasn't. it's setting stuff up, right? It's making the defense respect it. And you know this, Matt. You get one guy, and that's the thing I love about the chess match within the game. You could have 10 guys do everything right, okay? And that one guy's not in the proper gap, and maybe he's cheating one way because he's worried about a jet sweep. And then you get a Keaton Mitchell, you pop him through, and he's gone for 60, 70 yards. So that's why that motion is so important, and it does put stress on defense. It makes them have eye discipline. It makes them not cheat, and you always have to respect that. So when you can use the sidelines, I agree with you wholeheartedly, it makes a world of difference. And so, yeah, I like what Donnie Kirkpatrick's doing offensively. So, your point's well taken. That's the right thing to do.
And, Rennie, there seems to be, the last few games, there seems to be, like, a lot of space in the middle. But if there's any way that we can find receivers to cross and then catch that ball, man, they've got – and that's another thing about our receivers, so athletic, they can get yards after the catch. We have a guy like C.J. Johnson. I really believe if he can stay healthy, obviously stay out of trouble, and keep his work ethic, he could – make it at the next level. The biggest thing with him is obviously keeping his emotions in check. That's been his biggest downfall right now, Achilles heel. But we, but Adi, you got that. I'll tell you another one, Rennie, that I really liked. It's a speedster. He doesn't get enough credit. It's Josiah Hatfield. If we could get a lot of touches with this Josiah Hatfield, he's the guy that I keep my eyes on. Like that dude is really special to this team. And the speed he has just blows me away.
And to go on what Matt was saying, right? So that's a guy, Hatfield is a guy you'd want to get some jet sweeps to, right? Try to get him in space. But getting back to Johnson and Adi, you know, I love their size on the outside, right? 6'2", 6'3", lengthy, right? Those are the guys you want to the outside. And you talk about, you know, Hatfield in the middle. You got the nice slot guys in the middle that can do damage as well. So ECU is in a good spot offensively to take advantage. And that's really, you know, what a Donnie Kirkpatrick, all offensive coordinators are going to do this. You know, once you're going to have a game plan, but once you get into that game, it's okay. What is the defense doing? Where can we exploit them? And then, you know, we're going to take what they give us. Right. And so the thing I like about this ECU offense that's grown over the last couple of years is they have people to make plays, whatever they call for, whatever the defense is doing or not doing, I should say. So, you know, I think they're in a good position offensively.
Yeah, and one thing I've noticed this year, the Marshall game and the Temple game, when the defense, when it's conducive for our offense against the defense where we can really utilize our tight ends in the passing game, we seem to have a lot more success. So we'll see if we have those opportunities Saturday.
Yeah, for sure.
Rennie, obviously, with the looking at the American, I know we're at time constraints. Obviously, we'll make sure that we don't keep you. But one of the things that came out, obviously, again, last night was the, I should say on Tuesday night, was the college football playoff rankings. Want to get your thoughts on first with Cincy being number 5. It's just very strange to me. How about the very fact they're number 2 in the nation, but yet the committee has them at 5? It just seems like there should be more in sync, if you will, there, where if it's 2 there in the polls, it should be 2 in the, there. I'm not a fan of Cincy, but I will give them credit that they do deserve it. If you're number 2 in the poll, they should be number 2 there.
Well, and let's be honest, the CFP committee only moved them up a spot because Michigan State lost, right? So the first week is all you needed to know what the committee thought about Cincinnati. And I'll take it a step further. To me, it's more of an indictment on the American Athletic Conference than it is Cincinnati, because no one's been ranked in the American other than Cincinnati. I thought that first poll, it was after Houston knocked off undefeated SMU, but that was a great game, right? It's a kickoff return for the win, and so they're both at one loss. So I thought they both were going to be in at least the tail end of the poll. They weren't in the tail end of the poll, and you start off with Cincy 6. I go, okay, the committee's spoken what they think not only about Cincinnati but the American. And let's be honest, guys, and we've talked about this. The American from top to bottom hasn't done themselves any favors to where they normally are. And that's the unfortunate thing. The American always struggled with national recognition. I've always thought the national media did not give the respect that the conference deserved. 2017 UCF, what they did You know, there's been others, the Memphises, it just doesn't get the respect. So they started getting that respect, right, with Cincy. And then everybody in the conference this year just, you know, it just hasn't been what you would expect out of UCF, although I think they're turning the corner now and they have a chance to have 10 wins. You know, Memphis isn't the Memphis that we've seen in the past. Navy, we've talked about Navy. They're not, you know, the Navy. Tulane, the last couple of years, has been a bowl team. You know, 1-2 wins. So I don't think the conference has done them any favors. But with that said, they're still not giving any respect. But since he did move up to 5, so I mean, they're right there. All they can do is win. And let's be honest, they have the second best win in college football this year. I don't think anyone can argue that. I think Oregon at Ohio State, I think people would agree that's the best win on the, you know, road win in Ohio State. But then to beat Notre Dame and Notre Dame, and Notre Dame hasn't gone away. They've played well. So they have the second best win. So all they can do is win out, but they're going to have some tough ones. They're going to have you guys at the end. They got SMU before that. You know, I think there's some turmoil there with SMU going on. I got them Saturday against UCF. And then they're going to get Houston in the championship game. So since he's going to have some bullets to dodge for sure, finishing out this season.
I'm going to make a couple quick points, and I know we're trying to wrap it up with you, Rennie.
No, go ahead. Wrap it a little bit. Go ahead.
I think it's a systemic problem with not just the American, but with the Group of Five and the way that they're treated by the College Football Playoff Committee, and it's a bunch of BS. And there's a lot of things that angers me about that, which I'll circle back around to. But what you mentioned about the perception of the American, I'm not sure it's an accurate perception. We've cannibalized each other in conference. Memphis was 5-4, but they beat Mississippi State. UCF has struggled, but they had a nice win against Boise State, and they lost their quarterback. Cincinnati, as you mentioned, took care of Notre Dame. Tulane's a 1-1 football team. They almost have 2 wins. The other win was against Oklahoma. So I don't know that the league is any worse than it has been in recent history. There's just a lot of parity. There's no bottom feeders. East Carolina is no longer a bottom feeder. Temple's the bottom feeder of the league now. And, you know, even they have a win over Memphis. So I think it's more parity in the league. And then just the whole thing, this whole Group of Five nonsense. I was listening to one of your colleagues on ESPN, you know, calling the Cincinnati game against Tulsa. And they were talking about the rankings. And I don't remember who the analyst was, but he was condoning. Well, they are a Group of Five team. There's no such thing as the Group of Five. It is a made up.
It is.
Yeah, it's nonsense. We're FBS. We're Division One. And I'm going to comment on this. I don't think you probably will or should. But one thing I don't get: ESPN owns the rights to the American. They own the rights to Sun Belt. They own the rights to the MAC. They own the rights to some Mountain West properties and some Conference USA properties. Why you would want to denigrate and put down properties you own in air, I never understand, but you hear it constantly. Well, they're just a Group of Five team and blah, 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 blah. You hear it constantly on ESPN, and it irks my nerves, and I don't understand it. To me, if you elevate it and put it more when it's deserved on an equal term with the Power Five conferences, the more viewers you're going to get, therefore the more advertisement you're going to be able to sell, the more money you're going to be able to make. If I was an executive at Disney, I would ask them, what the hell are you doing putting down products that you own?
Yeah, listen, I could tell you, I don't think announcers think that far in advance. I just don't think they do. And I will tell you this, the boss is never, there's never a, they never tell you what to say and what not to say. I've never been told one time, but I mean, I agree with your sentiments, Kyle. I understand. And just to get back to your other point, and I do agree with it because you guys know I'm a huge fan of the American, and yes, I think there's more parity. I think what I was trying to get at is like a UCF that's worked hard for their brand. Everybody thought they were going to be, you know, an 8-0, 9-0 team, which would have brought more national recognition. The Memphis that has earned it before. But I do agree with you. I do think they're kind of beating each other up. And there is a perception. There's no doubt with the committee out of the entire – and we have to use Group of Five because it's the only way to differentiate, right, what we're talking about now. But I do agree with you. There's Autonomous Five, and that's it. That's the actual only name. Power Five's made up as well.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, and the crazy thing is there's 7 new people on the committee. And I thought for sure, you know, since he needed to be at least 4 in that first ranking. And I thought, I go, you know what? I think this committee's going to do.
Oh, we lost Randy. He was about to make a good point, whatever it was.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. You have to come back next week, guys, and then we'll have Rennie back on to well, it's like sucks. A cereal. What happened? What is Rennie going to say?
Kyle, I got to give you props, Kyle, because that was a great question. And that's something that irks me, too. So I think that was a great question. And really enjoying Rennie's response here.
Whoa.
Yeah. I was getting excited. I got popped off. Well, I was just saying, you know, with seven new people, I thought, first playoff, I thought they'd have Cincy. I didn't think they would put them two where they were, Dave, in the other polls, but I thought three. I thought now they're going to put them at three. And the fact that they put them at six tells you all that you need to know about what they think, and to Kyle's point, not only about the American, but the group of five in whole. And again, guys, and we've said this, I think we've said this on the show multiple times, that is why, hands down, it needs to be a 12-team playoff, in my opinion. Like,
yes.
You need a seat at the table, and it's going to happen. I just hope these people, the powers to be that all kind of got their feelings hurt because everyone was blindsided with Oklahoma and Texas. Let's put that aside, and let's get the betterment of college football. It needs to be a 12-team playoff, and let's get more people in there, more teams in there. Let's give, you know, everybody a shot, and we know in this game – you could play in, you know, I was going to say Alabama. I'm not going to say Alabama. You can play at Georgia 10 times, right? And they might beat you nine, but you could beat them that one time. So let's get people in the playoff and get everyone a run at this thing. So hopefully it'll happen sooner than later.
Yeah.
To me, it's not about year one of UCF or Cincinnati playing Georgia, for example. UCF, when they were on that run, if it was a 12-team playoff and suddenly they were making the playoffs every year, instead of a New Year's Six Bowl, think about what that would have done for their recruiting and where they would be at this point.
And that would have changed the national perception for the American, right? What we're talking about. And just to show you disrespect, so I think, you know, that 2017 UCF team beats Auburn in the Peach Bowl, an Auburn team that beat Alabama, right? So they go undefeated. They go 13-0. I think they only moved them up the final ranking. I think they got to like eight in the CFP after all that. And in 2018, when they started the season, they started at 18. So, I mean, are you kidding me? At least Cincy, after the tough loss to Georgia, gained some respect and had a higher ranking. So, you know, it's working, but still, I agree with you, Kyle. The respect nationally just isn't there. And your point on them beating each other up is well taken. I can't disagree with you there.
And ready, before we let you go, we've got one quick question from a viewer, if we can. Right, Bubba? Sure. All right, I'll put it up on the screen for you. Yeah, we do. Hey, Rennie, how would you assess Memphis's kicking game? And then we'll end it there so you can get out of here.
I think it's okay. And I think I think it was Kyle's point, or someone's, might have been Bubba or you, Dave. I think that kind of plays into a little bit why Ryan Silver goes for it. Ryan Silverfield went for it as much. I don't think it's anything above average. So there you go.
So it's pretty much even.
Yeah.
All right. Ready? Well, one more thing. Are you going to be calling the Cincy? Do you know, are you going to be calling the Cincy East Carolina game on Black Friday?
Yeah. Those assignments aren't out yet, guys. We get them literally, we get them on Thursday, and then sometimes they're 6-day hold. So have no idea what I'll have Thanksgiving weekend. So,
all right, well,
you'll be the first to know if I get that game, though.
All right, we got Rennie, ugly sweater. Rennie, I have ugly sweater.
We're talking over each other.
Ready? Right, one more thing before we go. Again, I'm gonna mention this to you. I don't know if you remember from last time, but I'm handing you $1 million idea. The sports related true crime podcast where you analyze, investigate, sports related crimes, man. I'm telling you right now, there's been so many murders in high school athletes, etc. I listen to so many true crime podcasts. I'm telling you right now, with your background, it is a $1 million idea.
All right, Kyle, I'm probably gonna have to look into it. You're right.
All right, well, Rennie, before we let you go, how can people find your work?
Yeah, just on Twitter, RENEINGOGLIA. I guarantee I'm the only one on there. So, just on Twitter and out and about. I got SMU Memphis, as I said, Saturday at noon. And then next week I'll be on up in studio in Bristol. I got the FCS selection show. I love FCS football. So that's on Sunday the 21st, I believe. at 12:30. So yeah, I'll be busy the next couple weeks.
All right, man. Thanks as always.
For all right, guys. We'll talk to you soon. You got it. We'll talk to you.
Thanks, Rennie.
Like SMU, I think you meant SMU UCF. Who's SMU playing this weekend?
I'm not sure.
He said he had SMU. He said he had SMU Memphis. Yeah. That was last weekend. It's SMU UCF, I believe.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, we're very excited about Saturday, guys. I don't know about you. Has this been the longest week as far as being a football fan? Is it me? I feel like
I've got a lot going on, Dave. So for me, no, not really. Yeah, I've got a lot going on, but it's actually gone by relatively fast. Surprisingly, if I didn't have so much going on this week, I would have probably been the same way. Because really looking forward to the game. I should have been more aware of Memphis's quarterback situation. Did not like hearing that. Matt, do you know how healthy this kid is? I mean, if he didn't play against UCF. Was he 100%, and is he still 100%?
Well, I'll tell you, he looked 100% to me last week against SMU. I went back and watched that game. He did not play against UCF, and right. This is Hennigan. So they had the backup down there when they were in Orlando. Now, I think that's the same case when they played Temple as well. So, you know, my point earlier was from the outside looking in, you see those games, and you say to yourself, wow, like this is a complete anomaly. How in the world did Temple beat Memphis? But then you look further and the quarterback wasn't healthy. He's very effective. I'm impressed with what I see when I watch them. They have a big, big offensive line, some big row graders, and some very talented receivers on the outside. And they have a pretty good system, play calling system. He's not particularly mobile when you watch him. So when they run, they like to run the zone read a lot. But he's not much of a threat to run. So as a defender, you can almost tee off on the running back, which is good. That's good for us because we seem to struggle against mobile quarterbacks. But I'll tell you, he did look healthy last week, and he's going to present some challenges for us.
Oh, we need to hit him in the mouth. That goes without saying. We need to hit him in the mouth. And I'm not wishing him ill health that we knock him out of the game. But maybe we can cause him to have like an ingrown toenail or something like that. But it'll be what it'll be. I just feel good about this game. I may be wrong. I've been wrong before, but I got a good feeling.
Hey, Matt, can you believe it? Is this the first time in history Kyle and I agree on something on the show? I mean, this is great, man. I love it. Christmas early.
Absolutely. You know, it's nice to see. It's a little different than the Hannity-Geraldo Act we've seen in the past. So when you guys agree, I'm just going to bring up politics. So right away, no, I'm just kidding. I won't do that to the show. I won't bore people. But no, it's always funny when you guys agree.
Well, I mean, you know, go ahead, Bubba.
Speaking of the health of players, though, Jaquan McMillan limped off last Saturday against Temple. Coach Houston didn't reference him specifically, but he was asked in general terms as far as the health of the team, and he said he felt very good about this weekend. So I would say that probably bodes well as far as Jaquan McMillan playing, which is absolutely huge, especially with some of the skill guys that Memphis has, like Calvin Alston and some of those other wide receivers.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. I think his availability and his health is going to be huge for us because we are so aggressive on defense. We love to blitz, and we're going to bring pressure. And Rennie actually made the point earlier, when you bring that pressure, it's going to create situations on the outside where you're in man coverage, and they have some very, very talented receivers. So it's going to be interesting to see if Jaquan's not 100% healthy, will we be as aggressive blitzing Memphis? So it's the chess match, but hoping he's ready to go because we need him.
I think you got to be. I think it's too much of what we do. I think if we stand back there and just drop back in coverage, he'll probably light us up. But you know, who knows? I hope Jaquan is ready to go in at 100%. And like I said, the quarterback stuff, I didn't realize that, and that irritates me. But I still feel good about things.
Well, I'll give you something good to think about, Kyle. If you watch that game from last week, SMU had plenty of chances to win. The opening possession, SMU marched the ball down the field. They were inside the 20. I want to say they were around the 13, 14-yard line. And Tanner Mordecai fumbled the snap from center. Gotcha. So that took away some points. They also had a dropped interception that led to a touchdown for Memphis. So I don't
think you heard Rennie say that there's some turmoil going on at SMU. I don't know if that's with the coaching staff or with the players, but Rennie made that comment. This is just a hunch. The players have kind of caught wind that Sonny Dykes may be on the next train to Lubbock. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he is. He's gone.
He's gone. Yeah, I feel very confident on that one. When you look at the way situation, SMU is not in the Big 12 like they probably will be in a couple years, but they're not there yet. Your dad coaches at that university. I mean, you kind of feel like that there's a sense of obligation. Maybe not. That may not be the right word, but with your dad's legend at Texas Tech, you feel like he'll be there. I'll go there.
Yeah, the one thing I wondered is SMU's got a lot of money. You know, if this was pretty much any other American school, I would say, yeah, he's gone, except if it was Tulsa. But SMU has a lot of money, so I still think it's likely he's gone. But I tell you what, a good way not to get that job is to finish the season on a losing streak.
Yeah, then you're there, and then you may – who knows what will happen, but – guys, what about Connecticut today with Jim Moore Jr.? They signed the deal, I think, running $1.5 million. You know, Matt, we're not picking on you because you live there. I guess it's guilty by association. You're in this great state of Connecticut. But
yeah,
I just hope that for Connecticut's sake that this is not just an attempt to say, look, we're making a commitment to football and not give him the proper – you know, when it comes to facilities, when it comes to
– I have good facilities, David. What they need is a conference.
I know, but ultimately, I'm talking about a real, real commitment to football and not just like him being a facade to that we don't really care about football. We'll just pretend like we do. We hire Mora, and then we're going to continue to focus on basketball. And men's and women's basketball seems like they care about maybe a little bit of baseball.
It's an interesting hire to me. He brings the big name, you know, which hopefully helps you in recruiting. I think the biggest problem Connecticut has, UConn, is that they need to find their recruiting footprint and they need to figure out who they are. You know, when they were really successful here back in like, you know, 2006 and they went to the Fiesta Bowl, they were in the Big East. They were a running team. They would pound the rock at you. They can't do that anymore. They don't have the horses. I don't know what type of offense he's going to run, but they got to find guys that can be successful there within that system. And then they need to get down and they need to recruit into New Jersey, Pennsylvania, get out of Connecticut and find their footprint.
No doubt. How about North Carolina, South Carolina?
Where was Jim Moore Drew your coaching at the present time?
Well, he was at UCLA for a while.
Right. I remember that. Well, you don't know where he was at right now?
I think he was out of coaching, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. All right. Well.
Analyst, maybe?
Yeah, I'm not sure. That's why I was asking. I don't know. It's a big name, but it wouldn't excite me.
Wasn't he in TV and radio?
Hell, I don't know.
I'm pretty sure. I know at one point he was. I'm pretty sure I thought maybe he'd been in TV and radio, but I'll have to double check. And then obviously prior to his time at UCLA, I guess, he would be the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons.
Well, which hire do you guys find more odd, that one or Clay Helton at Georgia Southern?
Wow.
I say that Clay Helton. I could see more and more at UConn, even though I know what you're getting at, Kyle, but the Clay Helton one has been a head scratcher. Georgia Southern does have a good football program. I get it, but I just don't see how he fits in that. You know, I think it's just more of a selling tickets thing to hire him and not necessarily he's the greatest fit. I could be wrong.
And a correction a moment ago, I'm pretty sure we said, and did, as far as Sonny Dykes, did someone say the first train to Lubbock? Texas Tech's already hired a coach. I'm thinking you probably meant to say Fort Worth.
No, I meant to say Lubbock. I've clearly been on some other planet the last.
Yeah, Texas Tech, because it looks like TCU is the job that Sonny Dykes is probably more interested in. And it may not have been the direction that Texas Tech wanted to go anyway, but Texas Tech hired Joey McGuire, who had been a very successful high school coach. But then the last several years, he had been on the staff there at Baylor, both for Matt Rhule and most recently Dave Aranda.
Interesting hire. It'll be good for recruiting. Sometimes you look down at UTSA, they made a hire like that, and it's worked smashingly. High school, it worked for them with Art Briles at Houston.
What about Southern Miss?
And speaking of the coach, I believe it's Coach Traylor. I want to say UTSA head coach, but I think that was Texas Tech's target. He, pulled his name, withdrew from consideration, and because they were looking at him, I think maybe it's a package deal. And then he opted to sign the new deal with UTSA, and so they brought in Coach McGuire.
Yeah, very, very good lucrative deal for him from UTSA, which bodes well for them coming into the American if they got that kind of money to throw around. I don't know. Interesting. Always when you get into the coaching carousel, it's interesting. And I guess with early signing period, these things are going to happen earlier and earlier. Every year, as we have our signing day in December, trying to get your new coach in there to keep a recruiting class together. I don't know. Interesting stuff, but still doesn't. That answers that still leads to the question, and maybe it's because he's rumored to go to TCU. What is the turmoil at SMU? Rennie alluded to.
I don't know.
I think the players sense that their coach is potentially looking to go elsewhere. And right. I think when the players sense that and they feel that maybe that the coaches, coaches in college football really, listen, we have some great coaches, but they also make me laugh sometimes because they preach all about team and what's best for the team. And so many of them are just out there looking for the next best paycheck.
Yeah.
And so if you're a player and your coach is entertaining other opportunities, but he's in the locker room telling you to stick together as a team, you immediately lose all respect. You're like, okay, whatever, man. Like, just go take your next job and we'll show you the door. So I think that I think that's what he was referring to.
Yeah, probably. Matt, you being there in Connecticut, Jim Moore Jr. being hired, suddenly this has become the UConn objective, but do you think, they were entertaining talks with CUSA as a football-only member. I don't know if SMU. I don't know if Western Kentucky and Middle have officially said they're staying in Conference USA yet. It looked like it was going to be official the other day, and then the MAC's back on the board.
Middle announced yesterday they're staying in Conference USA. I know that for a fact.
Okay. All right. So WKU is still potentially looking at the MAC. Think I need to catch back up on some news here. Boy. UConn do you think UConn will end up football only to CUSA? I think if CUSA will have them, they need a conference somewhere. They are not going to be able to make it as an independent.
I think they will. I think they will find their way into Conference USA. And God, it must be so hard to schedule. When you're in UConn, like you don't have that football history. You're not like BYU or Notre Dame. I mean, can you imagine trying to schedule home and homes with some P5 schools, it must be impossible. So I kind of feel like they don't have a choice.
Even grade 5, nobody needs to go to Connecticut. It's not like you need to go there for recruiting reasons. There's no players really in Connecticut that people are, we got to get in that fertile recruiting territory in Connecticut. So there's no reason for anybody to go there.
Yeah,
it's a tough place to win. It really is.
Conference USA, though, is with you're going to have Sam Houston State, you've got Jacksonville State, Liberty coming in.
And New Mexico State.
New Mexico State, and you have I mean, here's the thing with UConn, guys. UConn just got to, like I was telling you guys, UConn like felt like they were left behind and they should be a Power 5 school. And the reality is there's a reason why they were left behind. I mean, I think that basketball, they put it, you know, I'm a basketball guy. I love basketball, but they put their eggs in one bit.
Yeah, well, we do too. They're happy where they are now in the Big East. And they need some kind of home for football. To me, ideally, and we'll get off UConn and wrap this thing up. To me, ideally, it would actually be the MAC. I think if they were football only in the MAC, I think that would be a really good fit for them. But I don't, you know, that's a possibility. If Western Kentucky, I didn't even think about that. If Western Kentucky and the MAC are still talking, that could be the pairing. You could see UConn football only to the MAC if they're willing to take a football only. I know they told UMass to pound sand after a while when they wouldn't bring the rest of their sports in. So that'll be interesting how that plays out. But anyway, East Carolina, Memphis, let's give scores and then get out of here. Dave, what do you think is going to happen Saturday?
Oh, man, I love it. I think I'm looking really at this game. I really think our defense is going to continue to play well. I don't know why, but I've had a 31-21 Pirates, a 10-point win by the Pirates. That's what my gut feeling is. I'm going to stick with 31-21. I don't think we're going to obviously have a three-point game like Temple, but I don't think it's going to be a video game numbers. I think the defense is going to hold their own. I really do.
Dave, this is a scary, scary day. I was sitting here thinking 31-21, though I wasn't going to predict that because
well, what's going on here? You guys are agreeing way too much.
Yeah,
the ratings have gone down. The viewership.
I wasn't Dave versus Bayless here.
I wasn't going to predict 31-21 because I think it's disrespectful to Memphis and honestly, I think maybe need to analyze the game a little better with the quarterback situation. I'm going to say East Carolina gets it done. I'll say 31-28.
Oh man,
Kyle, that was my exact prediction, brother.
It's a ping pong match between you and me.
You just
he first was with me, then they went with Matt.
Kyle, you just killed me. You just completely took my prediction, man. I'll be honest. Like I sometimes usually going into East Carolina games, I feel like I have a pretty good feel for what's going to happen. This one for me is the toughest one of the season. I really struggle with this one because I think it's two teams that are really evenly matched. I really do. I think we're pretty evenly matched, but I do feel like we have something going right now. Like, I feel like the team is just maturing, like every week, getting better, especially defensively. Not to sound cliche, but I really, really think in this type of game, it's going to come down to turnovers. It's just, I think it's going to be so close. It's going to come down to like one big turnover. Kyle, I don't know. I was thinking 31-28.
We're not playing for anything, so you can go 31-28.
I'll go 31-28. I'm sticking with you, man. I'm in agreement there.
So we have three out of four guys already say the Pirates win. That's all I care about is a 1-point victory. That's all I care about. Because I'm not a betting guy, so I'm not gonna lose any money. I just want my Pirates.
All right, you would win the money as long as we won by 1 point, as long as you took East Carolina.
Yeah.
We're 100 off.
Bubba, what do you think? Bubba, you with us?
I am, and okay. I don't have a score prediction, but you know, Dave basically just made my prediction for me, and that is that the Pirates will win. You know, whether it's by one or by a little bit more than that, I do think I agree totally with what Matt and Kyle are saying. With this being such an evenly matched contest between East Carolina and Memphis, I think we'll find a way to get it done just with the way we're playing right now. But I do know, you know, the last couple of weeks when we found a way to protect the passer and we found a way, for the most part, to take care of the football, we did have a pick that Holton threw last week. And then I really don't take the other one with Garcia into consideration because, like Coach Houston said, the game was decided. But I think if we continue the track we're on I like our chances of being victorious.
Hey, guys, being a wrestling guy and an old school wrestling guy, Matt Semenza, I think all four of us agree we're now the four horsemen. What do you think, Kyle?
Us four or East Carolina?
Yeah. Yeah, the four of East us Carolina, are the four horsemen. All four, four of horsemen. Us picked. All okay, four of us say the Pirates are going to win. We're the four horsemen now.
Well, who's Flair? Who's Double A? Which version?
Well, the original. Let's go with the original version with Ole and Arn. And
I like the Barry Windham version. I'll be Flair. I'll be Flair. You're bald, so you can be Arn. I can see Matt Moore as the enforcer. So
yeah, Matt's the enforcer. Yeah.
Okay, so Matt's Arn.
Bubba's Lex Luger.
No, but Dave, you're Tully Blanchard because you can be a little annoying prick. So that makes sense.
We're 50 minutes into almost 51 minutes in the show for us to agree, and then
this is first take.
And then Bubba is either Ole or Barry Windham, depending on which version we're going with.
What about Lex Luger?
Oh, God, no. Not that version. No, not Lex. I like Lex now, but I didn't like Lex back then.
To show you how much...
You know what, though? You know what, though, Bubba? You know what? Lex Luger was not a wrestling fan before he got into the business. He got into the business because of his body. So that does fit Bubba to a T. He was an athlete with a body. Not that I'm saying Bubba has a body. I'm just saying. So, yeah, hey, Bubba's Lex Luger. It's actually perfect.
I love it. What? Hey, what were you gonna say?
Since I heard four horsemen, I wasn't even thinking wrestling. I was thinking the 1924 backfield for Notre Dame.
That's what I was thinking too. I was thinking the same.
Matt, I'll give you a pass. Bubba, you're from almost woo Charlotte, North Carolina, baby, the home of the Nature Boy Ric Flair styling and profiling all night long. So that's shameful. That's just shameful.
All right. Do you have any movie picks this week? We have a few minutes before we're going to get out of here.
Matt, that's you.
Yeah. Jeez, man, that one came out of nowhere, and now I'm struggling with it.
I'll give you a minute to think. I think a movie advertised today that's available on pay per view and I guess streaming services right now. Matt, I'm curious if you've seen it. Two Yellow Lines.
No, I haven't seen that. I haven't heard of that yet.
It looks really good. It looks like a father is an ex-con. He's trying to spend time with his daughter, and somebody kidnaps his daughter and then on a Harley, and he's chasing them. So it looks like a kind of right up my alley.
Like Liam Neeson kind of movie?
It looks like it's maybe more more depth than Taken. Taken's a great movie, but it looks like it may be more relationship-based between the father and daughter than Taken was, but Taken is fan. I love when the hero is just as ruthless as the heel or the bad guy, and in Taken, Liam is just as ruthless as the bad guy.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a kid's favorite, I will tell you this: on Paramount Plus right now, they're streaming. It started in movie theaters. Clifford the Big Red Dog. That was I'm like the best daddy ever because we had movie night. They didn't have school today. My kids. So Clifford the Big Red Dog. So if you're looking for kids, grandkids, and you have Paramount Plus, don't get it, and you can cancel it like Bubba after 7 days, and you can watch Clifford the Big Red Dog.
I've never canceled anything after 7 days.
One day, right?
Dave, how is Clifford as an adult watching it? Because I actually was a huge fan of Clifford growing up, so it's actually, I saw the commercial.
Yeah, I had no expectations, but I used to be I was like you, Kyle. I used to love Clifford as a kid, and I have to say, it's decent. I didn't go like, well, still got 45 minutes of this thing, or like an hour of this thing. It was decent. They did a good job on it, so I'm not saying I'll ever watch it again, but I wasn't like bored with it. So,
and what caused it to get the PG rating over G?
A little inappropriate context in the
I can't.
Hey, so I do have one. And I'm, all right. You know, like this is one of my favorites because Kyle mentioned Liam Neeson. I'm a big Liam Neeson fan. One of my favorite movies called The Gray. I don't know if you guys have seen The Gray. So Liam Neeson is on an airplane flying over Alaska. with a group of convicts, sort of like Con Air style. The plane goes down. There's a whiteout, a snowstorm. The plane goes down in Alaska and lands in the parameters of a wolf den.
Oh, wow.
So they have to survive the crash, and then they have to survive the wolves. It's called The Gray. Awesome, awesome movie.
And there's hundreds of wolves, and it's Matt, I wanted to love that movie. I was so excited when that movie came out, and I hated it. I hated that movie. I don't know why I hated it, but I did. I wanted to love it, and I watched it, and I was like, I just could not get into it. I did. This is Black Hawk Down's another one. People say Black Hawk Down's one of the greatest army or war movies ever made. I hated Black Hawk Down. There's just some movies, for whatever reason, that don't connect with me. And The Gray was one of them. And I don't know why, because maybe I should watch it again, because everything about the movie seems like something I would like.
Yeah.
Maybe the ending. Maybe it was the ending that bothered you.
You know, I love the ending where he says, there's something Liam says. There is a line in that movie that's great. Something about, do you remember the line at the end right before he fights the wolf where he says something about
into the fray once more? I can't.
Yes, it's a badass line. It's a really good line. Something about we get to dance into the fray once more or something like that. It's a cool line, but no. Go ahead, Dave.
No, I thought you were done. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm. Go ahead.
How about you, Bubba? You're a movie guy. I would have to say Bubba's probably gonna go with a comedy.
I really hadn't given it any thought. So, Kyle, finish your thought.
I've lost my train of thought on it, but it was something about the movie. Liam, you want another good Liam Neeson movie? We'll throw another good Liam Neeson movie out there. Very young Liam Neeson. Next of Kin. He plays the brother of Patrick Swayze.
That's a great movie.
You ever seen that, Matt?
I saw that way back in the day. I'd have to go back. Yeah. What was it? Was that like, that was good. It was like early 90s, right? Or something.
88, 89 as Patrick Swayze from the hills of Kentucky. He's a cop in Chicago. His brother gets killed. His other brother, Liam Neeson, comes up from the hills of Kentucky. And then the rest of his hillbilly family comes up, and it becomes a bunch of backwoods guys from Kentucky taking on the mob in Chicago. And
great movie.
It makes for a very, very interesting movie.
Okay, Dave, I have one, and you're right. Not surprisingly, it is a comedy.
Nothing wrong with it.
Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield.
Yes.
The part where he's in the hot tub and he's snorkeling and says, "This is what I call marine biology."
Call me when you have no class. That's one of my favorite 80s movies. I love Rodney Dangerfield. He's fantastic. Very underrated as a comedian, a writer, you name it. Love him. And you were talking about Patrick Swayze. One of my favorite movies that I watch a lot.
Roadhouse.
I love that movie. I just think that movie is just like, oh my gosh. I don't
want to go home. Right. The character of Dalton in that movie is classic. I love Sam Elliott's character, Wade Garrett, when he walks up to the Double Deuce and pulls back and runs his hands through his hair and goes, "The Double Douche." great movie. Got a lot of great lines. Another great line from Wade Garrett: "When a guy's got a gun pointed at your head, you got two choices. You can die or you can kill the mother trucker." Only he don't say trucker. Just classic late 80s bad movie, but in the best kind of way.
I have a question for you guys. Something I do, maybe I'm the biggest nerd on the planet, but never mind. You don't have to answer that question, Kyle. do you ever find a movie to fall asleep to? Am I the only one that does that?
All the time. Every night, just about.
Like a movie that you watch 100 times. Like the other night, after you guys, we did a show. I watched Rudy. I've seen that 5,000 million times, but I put on Rudy to fall asleep to. Like I could probably make it 30, 45 minutes into it, and I'm gone.
But no, you know, I, uh, I put on my CPAP machine and fall asleep to the sounds of heavy breathing. No, I don't fall asleep to a movie. To answer your question, I it's kind of hard to watch a movie when you got a mask on your face. But I tell you what, I will fall asleep to. I'll start watching TikTok or YouTube videos, and eventually start dozing, and I'm like, all right, it's time to go to bed.
That's fine. How about you, Bubba? Have you ever done that before?
I've fallen asleep to about anything on TV.
No doubt.
And Kyle can attest, it takes very little for me to fall asleep.
Bubba was over at my house, and we were watching the Hawaii game, and Hawaii and Navy, and Bubba kept falling asleep. I was like, Bubba, you get up and go to bed, man.
First time I'd ever been over to Kyle's house, so I mean, that's why I'm trying to push through to no avail.
And he stands up, and he's like, are you going to stay up and watch this? I was like, yeah. He stands up, and then he sits back down and falls back asleep.
So, that I just wondered if you guys did that. It's something I've always done, or especially in my adult life, is find a movie to fall. I absolutely love movies. Maybe we need to do the movie objective, but
doing the sports. I'll tell you an interesting fact that nobody really wants to hear. This is a deep dive. Historically, not so much here lately, knock on wood, but historically, 10 years ago or so, I had a lot of problems with anxiety. And during those times, I would fall asleep to movies or TV. There was something that would, when I would try to sleep, that would relax my brain about the constant noise. I guess it kind of kept me from being inside my own head. So I'll tell you that. That's a little more information than anybody cared to know. but besides that, no. Normally, I want complete silence except for white noise. I like to have a fan on, more for the noise than the breeze.
They call me the breeze. We've got a great, by the way, guys, ladies, watching and listening to the show, obviously the Pirate Preview. Bubba, I know the Pirates are going to be back on, I was going to say the gridiron. I know it's going to do that the hardwood tomorrow night, that being against Canisius and the Golden Griffons. And that's tomorrow night. They're out at Buffalo at 7 o'clock. So yep. That should be a great game.
The Golden Griffons, they lost in their season opener down at Miami. I think it was 77-67, but it was a 10-point margin, whatever the score was. So they're very competitive against an ACC opponent in their first game. Last year, they were everybody was hit by COVID, at least to some degree, but they really felt the effects of it. I think they went something like a month and a half to 40 days without playing. So they have some veteran pieces. And Pirates are going to have to play much more soundly than they did in game one against South Carolina State, probably to earn a victory on Friday night against Canisius.
Yeah, Canisius has some tradition and plays in the same league with Iona of Rick Pitino fame.
No doubt about it. So that's tomorrow night. We'll have our overtime tomorrow night after the game, and that'll be for Friday nights, probably in the 10 o'clock hour. And then moving ahead to Saturday, I know we have obviously the football game. It'll be 11 Central, 12 noon. So we will have that Saturday afternoon. We'll have the Pirate football playback probably in the 4 o'clock hour, I would say. So good luck to the Pirates. In fact, the Pirate football playback is presented by L&K Custom Homes, right, guys?
Yeah, absolutely it is. And, K.K. Walker is the owner and proprietor of L&K Custom Homes. And tell them how they can get a hold of them, Dave.
They can do so by calling 336-688-8461. And I tell you what, KK does a great job. Just like he was a great player on the gridiron, he's a great contractor. And you can email him, by the way, at kwalkerkev@aol.com. And guys, on Facebook, if you get a chance, look at the work the guy does. I'm serious. Like, even if I didn't know Kevin Walker, and even if he were not a sponsor of the show, you got to give the guy props for the great job that he's doing for these homes in the Triad area, Greensboro, and obviously High Point, Winston-Salem. But I'm sure if the money is right, like the old country song by Electric Frizzell, if you've got the money, he's got the time.
Kevin, you come up to Connecticut? I need some work done, Kevin.
There you go. Yeah, in the pool there.
Pirates supporting pirates.
Yeah, right. As they were putting in the pool today, Matt, were you staring out your window and picturing the chick there in the bathing suit? Yeah, you know, and then the scene from Christmas Vacation.
Officially, no. Unofficially, yeah.
Okay. All right. Good deal.
Depends on who you ask.
The official, unofficial.
Matt was standing there, and then all of a sudden, his daughter walks up and says, "Daddy."
No, she walked up and says, "Santa Claus."
Yeah, that's right. Santa Claus. Yeah.
Is Rusty still in the Navy?
I don't steal my line, Dave.
It's only a week. Kyle gets to say that to Pete Medhurst.
And I'm going to do it, and it's going to be fantastic. And you guys don't give it away before I do it, because I'm going to deliver it. I'm going to deliver it dead face straight. I'm going to go. We're looking here at your depth chart, and one thing I don't know, I don't see here, is Rusty still in the Navy, and going to confuse the crap out of him, no doubt.
All right. Well, that'll be great. So our Pirate football playback again, guys, after the game. And I feel confident. I feel great. I feel really good about this game. I'm happy that all four of us agree on something. That's, man, you need us to drop the mic there. So that's what we'll do. We'll see you guys. Thanks to Rennie. Thanks to, obviously, Matt, Bubba, and Kyle. Until next time, you've been watching and listening to The Sports Objective, and this is the Pirate Preview right here. Good night, everybody. Go Pirates.
See you at the airport.
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Udon Cheek, assistant track and field coach at East Carolina University. You are plugged into the Sports Objective Podcast. If you are a fan, you are plugged into the right place. And if you're really a fan, you will share that link. My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate down to my soul. And I don't back down, not at all. Find out when the cannons explode. Boom!